Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
I'm going to start the show today by sharing some information about two 9/11 events coming up on Tuesday, March 22nd and Wednesday, March 23rd. And I'll repeat this information at the end of the show, too. And then we'll continue with some powerful audio clips of two lieutenant colonels telling it like it is. You might deny the challenges that I make to the official conspiracy theory of 9/11, but I'm in really credible company with these two retired military pilots. So let's begin first with the events. On Tuesday, March 22nd, the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group brings you Christopher Bolin, journalist and author of the book Solving 9/11. It will be held at the Elmwood Community Center in West Hartford at 6:30 p.m. It's free and open to the public. Christopher Bolin has been on a speaking tour of parts of the U.S., and the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Movement just recently got word that he would be in the area for a few days and quickly set up this event. And again, it's at the Elmwood Community Center, which is sort of at the corner of South Quaker Lane and New Britain Avenue. To enter the parking lot, take Burgoyne Street, which is off of South Quaker Lane, not far from New Britain Avenue. So again, that's journalist and author Christopher Bolin on March 22nd at 6:30 p.m. And then I want to tell you about the second event coming up on Wednesday, March 23rd. As part of the Progressive Movie Night, we'll be sponsoring the film Incontrovertible. It's a new British film about 9/11, and we'll be showing that at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. And again, that's Wednesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. So two events, Tuesday, March 22nd, Christopher Bolin, sponsored by the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group, and on Wednesday, March 23rd, the movie Incontrovertible as part of WWUH's Progressive Movie Night. More information on these two events can be found at the website 911truthoutreach.org. And again, that's 911truthoutreach.org. On the last show, you heard the pilots for 9/11 Truth challenging the science of the official account of the planes on 9/11. Now you're going to hear the conclusion of that presentation, which is roughly 5 minutes long.
Could you get such an airplane with a 156-foot wingspan into a 208-foot target without having any time in the type aircraft?
I don't think so. And as you were saying, 510 knots according to NTSB.
That's right. That's supersonic speeds and just mid-level altitudes. Now,
to me, those kinds of numbers, I think it's impossible.
We already know that based on Egypt Air 990 as precedent, that not only does a 767 not have the capability of such speeds, but according to Egypt Air 990, such speeds also cause structural failure. But let's explore the hypothetical that an unmodified 767 can obtain such speeds intact. Again, there is a reason the manufacturer sets speed limitations. These factors include flutter, as we have seen, but other factors include control surface effectiveness, center of pressure versus center of gravity, trim characteristics, to just name a few. When aircraft exceed their design limits, control effectiveness becomes increasingly non-existent. For example, as airspeed increases, the wing generates more lift. Therefore, the pilot needs to push the nose down. Trim is used to relieve these pressures. There comes a point when the airspeed is so great that the throw on the elevator and trim are at their limits and no longer can keep the nose down, and the aircraft is now said to be out of control. The elevator and trim only move so much. Conversely, and a bit more technical, center of pressure moves aft as airspeed increases. If this center of pressure becomes too far aft, the controls may reverse, in which you cannot keep the nose up. This is known as Mach tuck, and the faster you accelerate, the more the nose wants to push down. What happens when going downhill? The aircraft wants to accelerate more. Again, the aircraft is out of control. Further control reversal comes into play. Ailerons are used to turn an aircraft. One goes up, the relative wind hits it and pushes that wing down. On the other wing, the opposite aileron is moving down to push that wing up. At excessive speeds, the down aileron grabs more air from the relative wind and actually causes more drag, pulling the aircraft in that direction, opposite the turn. The pilot wants to turn right, but the aircraft turns left. This is called control reversal, and again, the aircraft is out of control. These are just some of the basic reasons manufacturers set airspeed limitations for an airframe. Again, hypothetically speaking, even if the structure remained intact at such excessive speeds, could these hijacker pilots counter such factors? Perhaps this is just another reason why so many experienced aviation professionals are raising their red flags on the government story, and the list grows. Bottom line, it's highly unlikely the damage done to the World Trade Center and the Pentagon was caused by the reported hijackers in which their best pilot could not control a single-engine Cessna at 65 knots. Some like to argue that since the World Trade Center buildings were some of the tallest in the world, that the buildings make an easy target to hit with a commercial airliner. Navy pilots take pride in the fact that they are set apart from other pilots since they perform operations from an aircraft carrier with very small margins for error. Navy pilots know the skill it takes to hit such a target, even at landing speeds in highly maneuverable jet fighter aircraft. It is contradictory to suggest that the World Trade Center is so large as an excuse for hijacker pilot ability while at the same time taking pride in some of our best pilots who use almost the same size target to tout their stick ability. Combine that with the added controllability factors at high speeds and dynamic pressures, it is absurd to think these hijacker pilots who couldn't control a 172 at 65 knots could easily hit their targets completely and thoroughly, especially being 3 for 3. Pilots for 9/11 Truth have now analyzed the aviation aspects for each event which occurred on 9/11. The Pentagon, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and now New York City. Thorough analysis proves what we've been told by the 9/11 Commission is a lie. It's interesting to note the reported aircraft, which have numerous videos and witnesses to the event, do not have recorded black box data available, and of the data of which is available, prove impossible speeds for airline fleet transport category aircraft. Those events for 9/11 which do not have any videos and very limited witnesses, most conflicting with the government story, do have data available, allegedly from these aircraft. Unfortunately, all data, whether from black boxes or radar, does not support the government story, or is physically impossible. It appears at every turn there are grave conflicts with the government story. Why is current foreign and domestic policy being dictated based on an investigation with a growing mountain of conflicts? Why was the 9/11 investigation underfunded and set up to fail? It's time to get to the truth. Contact your representatives and demand a thorough, independent investigation. Advise them to be on the right side of history.
And now you're going to hear two retired lieutenant colonels who are both pilots and who are also members of Military Professionals for 9/11 Truth. These audio clips are from a 2010 event. And I apologize in advance for some of the sound quality. They were taped live, and so there are some imperfections. So let's begin.
Hello and welcome. My name is Dave Gapp, and I'm a retired U.S. Air Force pilot with 31 years service in the Air Force. I just retired in late 2009 with a background in flying fighter aircraft, as well as a graduate of the Air Force's flight safety course. I'm an experienced aircraft accident investigator, as well as safety board president. We currently find ourselves involved in a nearly 9-year-long war in Afghanistan, which has a projected Department of Defense budget of $120 billion for 2011, while spending an estimated $140 billion in Afghanistan this year. We now have more U.S. troops killed in less than 2 years President Obama has been in office than the 575 troops that were killed in Afghanistan in 7 years under President Bush. Troop levels in Afghanistan have expanded from 33,000 when President Obama entered office in January 2009. We have 98,000 troops there this month. Our federal deficit will be approximately $1 trillion next year, while military spending remains nearly 50% of our U.S. federal budget. We need a way out of this mess, to refocus our country's priorities on investing in education, infrastructure, and job creation. The ongoing war in Afghanistan is based on alleged involvement by agents of Al-Qaeda, of which many professional organizations have serious questions that are yet to be answered by the U.S. government. One of the many professional organizations that is proud to question the official U.S. government's version of the events of September 11, 2001, is being announced today, Military Officers for 9/11 Truth. It now has over 300 founding members and can be found at militaryofficersfor911truth.org. In my professional opinion as an aviator, I have the following concerns, which I would like to entitle Aviation Improbabilities. Now, I'm not saying that these are impossible to happen as individual occurrences, but that it is highly improbable that they would all occur in a series to have the outcome as professed by the U.S. government. The improbability of all 8 airline pilots voluntarily giving up control of their aircraft to individuals stating that they have box cutters and have or will kill passengers. This is not established protocol to give up control of the aircraft and responsibility of safety for all your passengers and crew. The improbability of all 8 airline pilots being killed without a deliberate, violent flight control reaction that would upend any cockpit invasion. The improbability of all 8 airline pilots not entering the hijack or emergency code into the transponders, alerting air traffic control of a serious problem. The improbability, if the above events occurred, that the marginally trained hijackers would be able to operate the navigational systems necessary and fly to specific points in airspace using instrument flight rules. The improbability of maneuvering the airliners above 400 knots airspeed, which is considered high speed, and precisely striking comparatively small World Trade Center 1 and 2. Professional pilots and simulators have about a 1 in 3 chance of accomplishing this maneuver. Improbability of maneuvering American Airlines Flight 77 from 35,000 feet descending to hit the Pentagon, as stated by the U.S. government in an analysis of the flight data recorder. Specifically, a 330-degree turn from 7,000 feet descending at a controlled airspeed of 290 to 300 knots airspeed to precisely strike the Pentagon at ground level by a minimally trained, unqualified hijacker. As a military fighter pilot, I have questions as to why numerous air defense systems were not utilized that day, including intercept aircraft that had plenty of time from 8:14 a.m. when Boston Center air traffic controllers realized something was wrong with American Airlines Flight 11 after it did not respond to authorization to change flight levels. There were 3 air defense exercises ongoing on September 11th, and their command posts and chain of commands were fully staffed. Otis Air Force Base, Massachusetts, had Air National Guard F-15 fighter interceptors nearby, which were airborne too late at 8:53. Flight 11 hit the North Tower at 8:45 a.m., followed by Flight 175 hitting the South Tower at 9:03 a.m. Many other bases, including Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington, D.C., and Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, have fighters on alert or available. Why did none of them launch in time to intercept Flight 77, as it did not strike until 9:37 a.m.? Finally, as an experienced aircraft investigator, I have serious questions regarding several of the crash sites. Again, it is improbable that of the 8 black boxes, in reality, a bright orange flight data recorder and a bright orange cockpit voice recorder on each of the aircraft, only the flight data recorder from Flight 77 into the Pentagon and both recorders from Flight 93 in Pennsylvania were recovered. With over 1.5 million man hours of time sorting through debris at the Fresh Kill site in New Jersey, it is improbable that we don't have more aircraft evidence of what actually occurred in each of the unfortunate airliners that day. Thank you again for your time and consideration of these facts.
The next audio clip you'll hear is from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman, who has been critical of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11 since very early on. He passed away a few years ago from cancer.
And now we'll bring to the microphone Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman.
Thank you. As a pilot, I concur with Colonel Gapp's analysis of the gross improbabilities in the official conspiracy theory. And as an old interceptor pilot, I share his puzzlement over the lack of interceptors that fateful morning. As a career military officer, I'd like to concentrate on the enormous harm the official 9/11 conspiracy theory has done to our military establishment and to the people in it. Using 9/11 as the excuse, the multinational corporations and bankers have used our brave young troops as cannon fodder in their corporate wars of aggression. They have systematically taken away our constitutional rights, including those of our military personnel. The entire war on terror is phony, and it would be even if you believed the ludicrous official conspiracy theory about 9/11. Both wars were planned before 9/11. The war of aggression against Afghanistan was in retaliation for the Taliban refusing UNICAL rights to build a gas pipeline across Afghanistan to get trillions of dollars worth of gas from the Caspian Sea to their tankers in the ocean. The military leadership knew it had nothing to do with the Taliban harboring Osama bin Laden. The Taliban had offered to give us Osama for trial, but the Bush administration ignored the offer for two reasons. One, they had no evidence against Osama, and according to the FBI, still don't. And two, the war had already been planned in detail to secure that gas pipeline. The war against Iraq was outlined in the PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, published before George W. Bush even became president. Its purpose was to provide a military staging base from which to control the entire Middle East and its tens of trillions of dollars worth of oil and gas. Now, the authors of that document admitted in it that the American people would never go along with their plans unless there was a catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, unquote. Well, 9/11 provided that event. Yet they were unable to tie Iraq to 9/11, no matter how hard they tried. So they came up with a new excuse, WMD, weapons of mass destruction. It is here that we in the military saw through their charade. They had us mass 150,000 troops in one small area in Kuwait, awaiting the start of shock and awe. If our military commanders had even the slightest thought that Saddam Hussein might have had even one WMD, they never would have deployed their troops so that they could be wiped out in a single attack with one WMD. The truth is that our government knew there were no WMD in Iraq. Our people in the military were put in a horrible position. Either sacrifice their career and their freedom by refusing orders, or knowingly participate in a war of aggression against their oath of office and the Nuremberg principles enshrined in the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So we have two corporate wars of aggression, wars in which we are making the same mistake as in my war, Vietnam. We are fighting the people who live there. What has been the result? About 5,500 of our finest have died. The lives of 40,000 of our injured soldiers will never be the same. Tens of thousands of our young men and women have severe psychological problems because of what they have seen and what they have done. Hundreds of thousands have been poisoned by depleted uranium and will suffer lives of pain and disability and will father thousands of children with severe birth defects. Our military services are depleted and demoralized. The VA system is underfunded and overwhelmed. The National Guard and Reserves have been subjected to tour after tour, disrupting lives for even the lucky ones who return unscathed. Jobs have been lost. Homes have been foreclosed. Marriages have been destroyed. children have been estranged, and for what? We have alienated our friends around the world and made new enemies. We have created thousands of new recruits for Osama bin Laden, whether he's alive or dead. And we have further endangered the American people, and all because of 9/11. You know, there's massive evidence of a cover-up with respect to 9/11 itself. I've spoken with both Governor Kaine and Congressman Hamilton, the co-chairs of the commission, and they both say that there are outright falsehoods in the final report. Never mind all the omissions. The report over which they had no control. It was written in the Bush White House by Philip Zelikow. Now, when you combine this with the confiscation of videotapes, audio tapes, black boxes, and other evidence by the FBI, it is clear that regardless of who was responsible for 9/11, the subsequent cover-up was itself a conspiracy involving elements of the Bush White House and the intelligence establishment. To prevent further 9/11s, we must get to the truth about all those involved in the last one. You know, the American people have never been told who was really responsible for 9/11. Dedicated researchers, like some we've heard today, have proven that it could not have happened the way the Bush administration said it did. Hijacked airliners do not fly around for an hour and 40 minutes without being intercepted, unless our air defense system was deliberately sabotaged. And 19 Arabs with box cutters couldn't have done that. Indestructible black boxes, and by the way, they're not really black, they're bright orange, but never mind. Indestructible black boxes do not evaporate in the same fire from which an unharmed passport floats to the street below. Airliner, all of whose parts carry identifying numbers, do not crash without leaving a shred of evidence as to what they were. You know, the truth about 9/11 is that after 9 years, we still don't know the truth about 9/11, and we should, and so should the families of victims. And let us always remember, the victims of 9/11 include not just the roughly 3,000 people who lost their lives that day, but the 5,500 military personnel who have lost their lives in the Afghan and Iraqi wars, as well as the hundreds of thousands of innocent Afghan and Iraqi civilians. All of these victims and their families cry out for a new independent investigation of 9/11. Only when the official myth is exposed and the truth told will the wars and occupations end. The creation of new victims stopped and our military returned to its constitutional task of protecting our borders and our people, not the financial interests of multinational corporations. This one change in military mission, eliminating the mission of protecting the global financial interests of multinational corporations, will allow us to greatly enhance our national security and reduce the defense budget by 80%. But it's not going to happen until people learn the truth about 9/11. Only then will people understand that our security is not enhanced by sending our working class youth around the world to kill the sons and daughters of working people in other countries. Only then will people understand that our security is not enhanced by sending our children to the Middle East to kill Arabs so the oil companies can profit from selling the oil under their sand. No more battleship Maines, no more Pearl Harbors, no more Gulfs of Tonkin, no more incubators in Kuwait, no more 9/11s, no more false flag attacks, no more lies. As a 100% disabled combat veteran, I say the best thing our government can do for us is to quit making more of us. But how do we get our government to support what's left of our troops by bringing them home while they're still alive? How do we achieve a new constitutional foreign and military policy. We, the people, must reassert our sovereignty, and the key to doing that is 9/11 truth. We must expose, indict, convict, and incarcerate the liars, the murderers, and the traitors, and then replace them with patriots devoted to the truth and to service to the people. Seek the truth, and the truth shall make us free. Thank you very much.
And again, you were just listening to two powerful speeches given by Lieutenant Colonel David Gap and Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman, given in 2010. Now, in 2016, 60% of our national budget goes to the military, and we are trillions of dollars in debt due to the 9/11 wars and some outright theft, like the $2.3 trillion from the Pentagon, announced missing on September 10, 2001, by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. And now I'm going to read you a few paragraphs from a long article by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts called "There Is No Freedom Without Truth. Conspiracies Are Real." And here goes. The charge conspiracy theory is used to prevent investigation. 9/11 was not investigated. Indeed, as many experts have pointed out, there was a conscious effort to remove and destroy the evidence before it could be investigated. The 9/11 families had to lobby and protest for a solid year before the Bush regime consented to a totally controlled 9/11 commission. The Boston Marathon bombing was not investigated. A scripted story was issued and repeated by the media. The San Bernardino shootings were not investigated. Again, a pre-scripted story took the place of investigation. The success of false flag attacks in the U.S. led to their use in the U.K. and France. The Charlie Hebdo affair was not investigated, and the official explanation makes no sense. The story has been closed with all the loose ends dangling. For example, why did a French police official investigating the crime allegedly commit suicide in his police office in the early hours of the morning, and why was his family denied the autopsy report? What happened to this disappeared story? Why did the police finger a third participant in the attack as the, quote, getaway driver who had an ironclad alibi? If the police were so totally wrong about this member of the gang, how do we know they are right about the two men they shot to death? How come alleged perpetrators of, quote, terrorist attacks are always killed before they can talk? How come the only story we ever get is what the government says? How can people be so gullible after the Gulf of Tonkin or Operation Gladio, etc.? He closes out the article to say, "Dear Western peoples, if you wish to be able to walk down the streets of your cities without being accosted by police, demanded to present identity papers, searched, detained indefinitely, or assassinated without due process of law, if you wish to be able to express your opinion about, quote, your government and its use of your tax payments, if you wish to be able to discuss current affairs or your personal affairs without being recorded by the NSA or the equivalent in your own country or by both, if you wish to be able to act on your moral conscience and to protest the violence the West applies to Muslims and others unfavored by powerful Western interests, if you wish to live in the freedom that was achieved in the West after centuries of struggle, wake up. Find time from less meaningful pursuits to become aware of what is being stolen from you. It is late in the game. If you do not stand up for truth, you will have no freedom, as there is no freedom without truth." And Dr. Paul Craig Roberts was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy and Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal, as well as author of several books. And now I'll announce again the two upcoming events. On Tuesday, March 22nd, the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group brings you Christopher Bolin, journalist and author of the book Solving 9/11. It will be held at the Elmwood Community Center in West Hartford at 6:30 p.m. It's free and open to the public. Christopher Bolin has been on a speaking tour of parts of the U.S., and the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Movement just recently got word that he would be in the area for a few days and quickly set up this event. And again, it's at the Elmwood Community Center on March 22nd at 6:30 p.m. It's at the Elmwood Community Center, which is sort of at the corner of South Quaker Lane and New Britain Avenue. To enter the parking lot, take Burgoyne Street, which is off of South Quaker Lane, not far from New Britain Avenue. So again, that's journalist and author Christopher Bolin. And then I want to tell you about the second event coming up on Wednesday, March 23rd. As part of the Progressive Movie Night, we'll be sponsoring the film Incontrovertible. It's a new British film about 9/11, and we'll be showing that at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. And again, that is free, and please park in Lot B. It's closest to the auditorium. And again, that's Wednesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. So two events, Tuesday, March 22nd, Christopher Bolin, sponsored by the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group, and on Wednesday, March 23rd, the movie Incontrovertible, as part of WWUH's Progressive Movie Night. More information on these two events can be found at the website 911truthoutreach.org. And again, that's 911truthoutreach.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.